Building Our Future, Economic Development Talk on a Wednesday for you. Gary Darby in the studio and kind enough to join on phone and do a lot of work with us today. William Nicholas, Director of Economic Development. He is Insight Park at Ole Miss. And John Maynard, the President and CEO of the Oxford-Lafayette County Economic Development Foundation. Good guests of the show, both of them back. Gentlemen, I hope you both are doing well and hanging in there throughout all of this.
Thank you, Gary.
Yeah, doing really well.
Thank you, Gary.
So let's go through this a little bit, and you know, I'll just kind of toss some softball questions to you, and let's knock them out of the park like you normally do. These times are so different in the way everybody's doing business, and now trying to get back with some of the doors open and things. And we'll start, William, with you. COVID-19 and how it affected things on campus. I think we've talked with several people on that campus. But can you give us an update about the university and things that you guys have been doing here through this time?
Yeah, sure, Gary. Thanks. And thanks again for having us on. So, you know, first of all, we are open for business. We're operating at mission critical status, but that means that most of us are working remotely. There are some positions that do require that they come onto campus, and those folks are practicing social distancing and using other safety protocols like stagger shifts and limiting people. So we're doing a very good job of keeping people apart. There's a big effort at the university to work through various scenarios and how we might bring our faculty and students back to campus. So this is, of course, going to include some of the safety protocols I just mentioned, and as well as increased sanitization, and there's more space in the facilities to become more heavily used. So while a decision hasn't been made, a date has not been set, our chancellor has drawn a line in the sand and said that by June 30th, a decision will be made, giving adequate time for families and students and student athletes to return to campus for an August start. That is the hope.
Absolutely the hope, and I think we all need to get that back. And for students and things, some of that face-to-face work, and I'm sure my wife would like to get away from me at some point and get back on campus and do her job as well. John, to you and the Economic Development Foundation of Oxford-Lafayette County and your business, which, I talked with Alan Kerr last week. I know he's got some webinars and things that are going on, and we discussed a little bit about the business in this area. But if you will, give us an update of things going on in your office.
Sure. You know, our office closed late in March, and we've all been working from home, but we've been definitely working overtime with the Chamber of Commerce and the Economic Development Foundation, because this, you know, the real tragedy of all this is going to be the economy, not necessarily the healthcare system. I know that sounds selfish from the economic development guy, but I think it's going to be a much longer term impact. So we're working very hard to make sure that people in business have a place to go, resources to grab onto, and an understanding about where things may be headed. Unfortunately, many times the questions are completely unanswerable, but we are trying to provide them with as much information as we can possibly put out there. So our website is constantly being updated with new information, specifically information about where to get the government relief packages. We've been up to date with what the federal government did. Now we have some new information on our website about what the state of Mississippi is doing, that the Mississippi legislature has approved $300 million to small businesses out of the $1.25 million federal relief package that came to the state of Mississippi. We actually hosted a call-in this morning with Senator Nicole Boyd and legislator Representative Clay DeWeese, and that the playback of that is on our website as well. But our biggest role right now is to understand what businesses need, how we can be responsive, how we can provide resources, and what they're going to need to be able to come out of this. You know, there's been an impact already of some businesses that have already said we're not coming back. But we also see that the businesses that who have been most innovative and able to start early with adapting to the new reality, those are the businesses that seem to be thriving and will survive this entire situation. So we pride ourselves on trying to lead innovation and the things that this community needs, so that events like something that's never happened before, like we have now, can actually be something that that transforms our community for the positive, not for the negative.
You know, a lot of the people that I've talked to in the business world, they were like, well, we had our business model. This is what we were doing and how we were going about it, and it perfected it to this point, and we're having some success. And now, you know, we shut down, we do, whether it's, let's talk restaurant or whatever it is, curbside, then 50%, and it was, how do we make this model move or create a new model through this time? And I think that's a lot of the questions business people are having right now, is especially for some restaurants, how do I know what 50% is going to be when, let's just say, Gary, William, John may not go out and eat or may not go out and shop still for a while? There still has to be a lot of questions among people.
And yes, there are, for sure. You know, I say that the businesses that are innovative and can adapt to the new reality are the ones that will thrive. But the reality is there are so many businesses that are just human dependent, people dependent, hotels and restaurants and anything in the tourist sector, the retail market, all these are very dependent on having human beings out and about doing those sort of things. And there's not a whole lot of adaptation they can do to be able to bring people in. So those are businesses that, you know, as we see some federal relief, we see some state relief, these are businesses that absolutely need that that extra handout that for, I don't know if you study economics, but I'm a big fan of Keynes, as an economist from England. But having that Keynesian stimulus into the economy is what's really required right now. But on the backside of this thing, we don't know exactly how the rest of the world is going to recover on their own. And we really don't know how people and their personalities are going to change, how their behaviors and activities are going to change because of all this. So those companies are going to have to be very adaptive and innovative. No matter which direction things start going, they're going to have to be able to move in the direction that it's going to happen. And so it's a very, very fluid atmosphere economically, and I'm eager to see the businesses that are going to thrive in this absolutely thrive. The businesses that are going to be struggling with this are going to need as much help as they possibly can, and we're trying to get out there to make sure that they get that.
William, before we talk about the Heartland Report and we bring up some positive things and another story of good things that was happening and is happening when this all started with COVID-19, there at Insight Park and the entrepreneurs and the people that you are talking with and dealing with, what are you hearing of things? I mean, we obviously had to put some things on hold, and maybe some ideas may get pushed back for a while.
A couple of things, Gary. First of all, there's not very many people working in the research park currently. There's probably five or six people that have continued to work. So I haven't had a lot of conversation with some of the entrepreneurs. We do have a big initiative that we are planning to build out of an Insight Park and the Innovation Hub, and that's the Biomedical Research Center. That is still very much part of our plan, delayed slightly, but very much part of the plan. The design is still being completed, or is almost completed. If we get back to normal operations, we'll put that out for bid, and that will build about 3,500 square foot facility for biomedical research, and adjacent to that would be a co-working space for all things entrepreneurship. So we're excited about that project, have a lot of optimism for it, and frankly expect several really good innovations to come out of that work.
So let's get into Heartland Forward, guys, affiliated with the Walton Foundation, a new study that, again, Oxford, as far as micropolitan statistically, strong growth and of the best in America. Who would like to begin and start with us with Heartland Forward?
Well, I guess I'll jump into this. This is John. We've been practicing a version of economic development in Oxford for a number of years, and that version looks to grow the town without changing the town, which sounds kind of flippant, but the reality is we've got to grow from the inside out. We can't go out and rely on other businesses to come in, particularly when we have, you know, a narrow or slimming workforce. We just don't have the population density that we would like to have to be able to bring in large manufacturers and others. So we've been working very hard to grow from the inside out. We've also had an awful lot of economic success, so that we can, we want to keep parlaying that success that Oxford has been demonstrating for a long time into something that we like, that keeps the town, the culture, and that sort of a thing the way we want it. Now, we have been doing this for a long time. We've demonstrated success. We've had other organizations such as Polycom say, look at your economic strength. You're one of the top 10 in the country. And then the Walton Family Foundation has said some very similar things about our community. But we've never had anybody who quantified what this version of economic development does for your community, that it is a better way to do economic development, or it is a better, more sustainable plan. Until now, this study that is out now essentially looks at entrepreneurial ecosystems and how those add to the job creation and to the sustainability of a local economy. And they look at both metropolitan areas and micropolitan areas. You know, micropolitan area is anything between 10,000 and 50,000 in size, and a metropolitan area is something like Memphis, Jackson, Mobile, those areas. So, but they looked at both of these, and they came to the same conclusions. And the idea being that if you have a strong ecosystem for startup growth, for young companies, for companies that are in their first 5 years of existence, with a very vital, young, educated workforce, then you're going to show much more sustainability in your economy. You're going to have much higher job creation than you would if you were working exclusively in the traditional economic development models and others. And this report called out Oxford, Mississippi, and I'll even give you that quote. I've got to find it through this is something I should probably have memorized, but said Oxford, Mississippi, the highest-ranked heartland micropolitan, comes in 12th out of the 550 micropolitans in the state, in the country. Oxford demonstrates the right ingredient combination, plans, and the ability to execute that is a role model for other heartland micropolitans to improve their economic performance and job creation. This is this is an entire country that was examined. This is a huge area, and there are 550 micropolitans, and for Oxford, Mississippi to be called out in this study is significant. It says that Oxford, Mississippi is different. Oxford, Mississippi is doing something great in the heartland, and that we need to be looking at what we're doing in Oxford to be able to help others get to where they need to be. And and this quote that they've got actually goes further to discuss the role that the university plays, and that the university has had the ability to grow the type of workforce, the educated folks, the type of people that can work in these younger communities, and that they are an integral part of the entrepreneurial ecosystem so that Oxford can thrive. And specifically to say that the University of Mississippi has engaged in academic entrepreneurship for many years, and these businesses create technology-based jobs. The University of Mississippi trains ample talent to put into these young firms. And that's something that really helps us out. Yes, we stand apart in Mississippi as being a flagship university and a flagship community, but this report goes to show you that the economic development strategy that we have adopted here, as well as the partnerships we have from the community as well as the university, is truly paying off and demonstrated as a leader for the rest of the country.
William, can you piggyback a little bit on that and the university and working with this model and with what John just mentioned?
Yeah, sure. So first of all, I'm delighted for John to get some external validation. Since the first day I met him, he's been talking about this model, and not everyone embraces it, but it is working well for us. And if you live in Oxford, you know that we've enjoyed a lot of economic success here. And this supporting this effort is perfect from the university's perspective. Our role is to teach, to educate students. And whether that be in entrepreneurship through our major or minor in entrepreneurship, or as John mentioned, to train talented students to take roles in some of these young firms as described in the report. So we have a very robust ecosystem of entrepreneurship on campus, which you've already mentioned, ranging from Insight Park and the incubator, the major and minor in entrepreneurship and School of Business. We have an entrepreneurship club. We have the business plan competition, conference, Center for Innovation Entrepreneurship. I mean, I could just go on. It's a very large menu of resources for budding entrepreneurs. And so
We feel the obligation to train those that are aspiring entrepreneurs and to help them start a company, and also, again, to train the workers that will be badly needed in these roles. So it's a good partnership with the city. We really value them and enjoy working with them, and I feel like we're making a difference.
Just a few more minutes with William and John. And John, let's go here first with you. And I think we are trying to get on this path to recovery. We're trying to move forward. I know that, you know, we're all trying to support local business and do our things wherever you may be listening to this Super Talk 93.7 signal today. But can you discuss a little bit of recovery and the path that hopefully you can and your group there with EDF and Oxford Lafayette County help?
Absolutely. Well, the path to recovery is going to be careful. We need to make sure that we do this carefully. The last thing in the world that we want to see is going out ahead of where we need to be, having this thing pop up again and having the government shut everybody down again. That's not good. I had a conversation with Congressman Trent Kelly, and his recommendations were that even if this COVID-19 thing were to begin to show more life, that we would probably not do the extent of where we've been. We would be doing more of a safe shelter. In other words, we understand the practices and procedures of keeping each other safe, keeping ourselves safe, and we would go that route. But still, the path to recovery is going to be something that we all have to do together. You've been indoors for such a long time. Go out and see your business friends. Go out and go to the restaurants. Take a trip safely. Do the things that first take care of the hospitality industry, because they're the ones hurting the most. Make sure that the people that are serving you and the places that you go, that you do everything you can to make sure that you're a good customer and doing everything you can to support them. In our particular situation, the university plays such a huge role in our economy that we really are working to understand what the university is doing, how the university is arriving at decisions. And this is a collaborative effort. I can honestly say I work with the university from Dr. Boyce's office all the way down, has been nothing but open, honest, direct, collaborative. They've been doing everything they can to make sure that the decisions that they make are good decisions, and they benefit the community as well as the university, and make sure that their students are safe, their faculty and staff are safe, and that the things that they do have a huge impact. So they want to make sure that they get them right and not do something that causes everybody to have to shut this thing down again.
Absolutely. William, same thing for you, if you will.
Yeah, sure. Thank you, Gary. Our chancellor and provost understand the significant role and impact that the university plays in economic development. We had a study done about a year and a half ago that demonstrated or revealed that our impact across the state is $2.9 billion a year. So it's very important that we, first and foremost, try to get our students back. Of course, we have to keep them safe, and that will be foremost, but One other thing I think to mention about the recovery, of course, no one knows exactly what it's going to look like, but I think the report, the Heartland report, points the way. It's a blueprint for us. So if we can get our students back to campus and continue to strengthen and expand our ecosystem, when done right, I think we're developing future entrepreneurs, and that's where the future of economic development is. But we do take our role very seriously, and we look forward to continued success working with John and others throughout the state.
John, before we finish this up, I know a big thing that, and I saw the press release from you, and for Super Talk, we have, we've been pushing the census, and we have been pushing filling those out, and have had multiple guests, but I know as an economic development person, you want to talk a little bit about the census right now before we're done.
I do, and I could probably spend the rest of the day talking about it, but I'll try to be brief. Lafayette County's historical response to the census has been traditionally low, which is abysmal. That's not something we want to do. We want to make sure that everybody in Lafayette County is counted, and the response in Lafayette County goes directly to the sort of benefits and other things that we become eligible for as a community. It helps with understanding who we are, what we are. You know, the companies that are looking to come into our community, the first thing they do is look at the census and what those numbers are. They want to know who the people are that are here. They want to know their family makeup. They want to know the income levels and all that kind of wonderful stuff. But if we're not telling the world who we are and how big we are, then we tend to get undercounted. We tend to get overlooked by many things because the numbers just don't reflect the right thing. So the responding to the census is absolutely critical, but it's also incredibly simple. You can go on to my2020census.gov, my2020census.gov, and it takes 5 minutes maybe to fill out the questionnaire. Even if you've already mailed in your census, or you don't have the code that it asks for, or whatever, go on there and fill it out for your particular address and for your family home, apartment, whatever you've got there. And it will get us counted. Right now, the average response rate in Mississippi is 55%, which that's pretty darn low. In Lafayette County, we're down under 50%. We're at 46.3%. We want to get that rate of response way above 50%. In fact, we'd like to have it 100% if possible. Yes, this whole pandemic has caused a lot of people to not focus on this sort of information, but this is something that won't take you more than 5 minutes, and it will have lasting effects on the quality of our economy, the quality of our community. So please, my2020census.gov, go fill it out. You can be duplicated. They'll weed that out. But let's just make sure that we get everything covered.
John, thank you for your time today, and maybe next time we'll be face-to-face when we get a chance to do this.
Oh, that's at your peril. Keep that in mind.
No, look, we often in this business talk about people with a face for radio, and you both know that I have that face for radio. And so it's you guys that I worry about. So, William, thank you for everything that you've done for the program as well, and for being on the show today as we talk here on this Wednesday.
My pleasure, Gary. Thank you for the invitation.
All right, guys, stay safe, and we'll talk with each other again soon. Thank you.